listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host of the most, Nikki Kalula. We have an awesome guest all the way from Kansas/Austin, Texas, Mr. Ben Schenberg. How are you, Ben?
I'm good, Nikki. How are you?
Good, good, good. And you are in a really happening new band called The Glass Bandit. And we had Ali Fabes on the show a couple, maybe 2 or 3 months ago now. And yeah. You guys just made this big move to Austin, Texas from Kansas. Tell me what that transition was like. I think it's so cool as a band you moved together.
Yeah, it's, you know, honestly, it's smoother than I think we could have probably hoped for. And we finally got some gigs starting to come in, which is exciting. So we're just starting to get our feet wet here. So we've just been enjoying shows around town and getting to meet musicians, but hopefully getting ourselves out there here pretty shortly.
And you know what, like, I've only been there, I think, twice for South by Southwest. And obviously, because it's a conference and a big music conference, that city comes to life. You know what I mean? So tell me what it's like just the day to day, because I've never actually seen it when it's just like doing its thing without South by Southwest kind of pumping people into it.
Yeah. So we live just a little bit south of the city. So it's nice and relaxed down here. But if you get 15 minutes north of us, it's vibrant just 24/7. There's always music going on, especially in that, like, the heart of downtown area. So if you want to see a show at 4 a.m, it's available to you for sure.
That's awesome.
Nice. I mean, beautiful outdoor spaces, beautiful music venues. I went to a brewery this evening to see a show, and it was like, you know, a stage that could have easily held a 15-piece band. Like, and there's so much of that. It's amazing.
You know, the one thing that's crazy, all the venues have changed so much. Mm-hmm. Like, when I was there was a great venue called Pangea. And it's not there anymore. It wasn't there when I checked in 2014. So, like, in the time that you kind of been there, what are kind of like the happening venues that you've been kind of like loving, big and small?
So one of the first shows we all went to together was at Mohawk, which is just a killer venue. It's probably one of the better setups I've seen. Just like a nice high stage. So even if you're at the back of a crowd, like, you can still see the band, which is, I feel like, rare. Stubbs Barbecue, really cool.
That's been there forever.
I just saw Sammy Ray and the Friends at Empire Garage, which is another really killer venue. And there's just a ton of those, like, those breweries and those, like, coffee shops just everywhere. Like, I just went to see Mozart's Coffee, little place on the lake. There was a guy, just a solo singer songwriter. Just, I mean, there's something for everyone. It's nice.
That's amazing. And tell me, like, where you grew up and how you got into music. What was the moment of Zen that made you want to be a musician?
Yeah, so I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. I grew up in Jewish summer camps. Like, I was a song leader at summer camps for years and years. And then I played in a little tiny blues rock band in high school and carried that off into college and toured around a little bit with the blues band.
Was it a blues trio or is it a quartet or what was it?
It was a blues quartet. So we it was a, you know, bass, myself on guitar and harmonica player, and the drummer. So just kind of real standard, lots of 12 bars. And we toured around Chicago and, Kansas, St. Louis, kind of did Midwest stuff. And lots of bar. I played at bars for years and years. So that was how I kind of cut my teeth, I'd say.
That's awesome. You know, that's a definite age where you feel like, let's tour, let's play. And then you learn real quick, like, man, this is not easy. You kind of learn traveling as part of the monster and joy of touring, because sometimes it can be brutal and sometimes it's awesome and it's like a road trip with friends. And sometimes it's like, a fight with friends that you're trying to make some kind of deadline. Tell me what you kind of learned the first time you started touring with that band. What was the name of that band, by the way?
That band was called Shoebox Money. And it was, I think the thing I learned is that you can't drink like a monster every night if you want to perform successfully night after night. And fortunately, you know, we never did like night after night runs. So I was kind of able to balance a little bit, but, I realized pretty quickly that I needed, as a singer who sings often out of my comfortable low range, got to stay hydrated, and you cannot stay up till 4 a.m. every single night.
No, I even find that like late night eating is out of the question because you're just messed up like the next day if you have to do it. It's like, you have a food hangover in the same way, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, of course, being an Ashkenazi Jew, I developed a lactose intolerance pretty early on in life.
Oh, man. So no late night pizza. That's
that's out of the repertoire these days.
So tell me about like, you know, you started playing with this blues band. Did it break up just because you guys had different vision, or what kind of like made you want to go in a different direction?
Yeah, this is, I actually had a pretty severe falling out with a band member. So we went separate ways, and I was already playing with Glass Bandit at the time. And really wanted to dedicate my efforts towards that. But, you know, for a long time, I was just a backup, you know, rhythm guitar player, backup singer. And so Glass Bandit and that band were the time where I really got a chance to start shining as a lead vocalist. So
isn't it crazy? Like, I can relate to you on so many levels with the lead singer that plays, that fights with band members, especially in the early stages. Because it's like, sometimes you just don't have people that see the same vision or share the same musical vision, or there's I find that entitlement is a very dangerous characteristic that sometimes artists or people can have, and it's just like you can't make room for any of that stuff when it comes down to like cutting your teeth, getting out there. Everybody has to be on board in the same way, and you're kind of like pushing a giant boulder up a mountain, and it's like if you do it together, it's amazing the things that can happen. And more often than not, you're going to be pushing that boulder up a little bit, sometimes by yourself. So I can relate on so many levels as to how sometimes things don't work out, but at least it's working out with this newer band that you have, Glass Bandit. Tell me how you guys came together.
Yeah. So I'm sure you got a little bit of this, the spiel from Allie, but we started playing covers on kind of anywhere we could get a gig in Lawrence, Kansas, at the University of Kansas. Allie was actually the one who was like, "Hey, you should come play with us, and just we'll have a good time, and we'll make a little money on the side as we're all going through school." And we just loved playing together, and we went through a lot of iterations of members. But kind of nearing the end of college, we really started to establish a really strong group and start writing tunes together, and just decided that it's a lot harder and a lot more rewarding to write your own music and really dig deep. And we've just been having a blast ever since.
I got a good question to ask you.
Yeah.
How did you all individually or collectively tell your parents that this is what you wanted to do after you finished college?
Well, you know, I'm still holding on to a full-time job, and I think they're as long as I'm not running back for too much cash these days, I think they're okay with it.
It's an interesting question. That's why,
I would say, you know, I think we're really fortunate to have a lot of very supportive family members. You know, I think a lot of the band's families are musicians by trade.
Right.
That helps
a lot.
and a lot of
these genes.
yeah. A lot of them, I think, were pushed, you know, their parents pushed them away from music in a way that made them resentful. And I don't think they want to repeat that trope. So there's been a lot of really, I think, strong support from parents, and they can see how much we love doing this together and how much it means. And life's too short to tell your kids these days to not follow their dreams. I feel like people, you know, that's becoming more comfortable and confident in family communication, which is
amazing. I 100% agree. My family has been coming to shows for 20 years. I tease my friends now that my parents go to more clubs than my friends do. So that's awesome. that support is important. And it's like, you know, I think there's definitely a worry when it comes to just like parents seeing their kids being artists. But at the end of the day, it's like I've seen so many parents force their kids into fields that they don't love.
Yeah.
And I think it's so priceless to follow your dreams and go after something, because, like, this is the time where you can do it, where you can go after it. And if you don't go after it now, you're going to be working some dead-end job that you have in 30 years regretting, why didn't I roll the dice on myself, on my own dreams? And that's kind of like what I had a tug of war with my family for a little bit. Not very long, actually, but I started planting the seeds when I was in college. And then it was like, as soon as I got my degree, they were like, you got your degree. I'm like, this is for you. Now I'm doing my dream. This was my duty was fulfilled as far as, you know, doing the kid duties. So tell me, like, when you were gigging in Kansas, how did you make that transition from being doing covers to kind of doing originals, and how was the response to that?
You know, I think if you are someone who wants to do music for a long time, you just start getting that itch. You know, you're playing those covers. You know, there's only so many times you can play "Follow Me" by Uncle Cracker in a bar before your brain starts to melt.
Absolutely. Imagine if you're Uncle Cracker doing it too.
Yeah. So just trying to, you know, at some point I started writing stuff in dorm rooms and in college houses. And, I feel like getting into that blues band early on was a great way, because, you know, it's very easy forms on the instruments. So it lets you kind of just start to work out your vocals and your lyrics. And Lawrence, Kansas is an incredible scene for kind of shedding and learning your craft. There's great open mic nights all around the Lawrence area and Kansas City area. And I mean, open mic nights are a saving grace for any songwriter. Like that's the proving ground. That's where you can learn to write really bad songs and slowly make them a little bit better, a little bit at a time. So I did a lot of that.
Well, let's play something. What are we going to play first?
Let's listen to Adam Savage. That's the song we have out right now. It's one that I think we're all real proud of. You can listen to it on Spotify, Apple Music, all that stuff. So let's try that one first.
All right, here's Adam Savage.
I work all day long to keep a roof over my head. They told me to look out for number one while I sweat and toil in the midnight sun. But when I come home and the working day is done, I wanna melt in your touch. I wanna lay.
love it, man. So great.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about the influence behind the writing and the arrangement of it. How did you guys come up with it?
Okay, that one, you know, that's one of the few songs that's just like, you know, you think about the people and the person that you love and just kind of get lost in the tune a little bit. You know, that's, you know, to be a little sappy here, that's one of those ones I just love, you know, when my girlfriend is in the crowd, you can just lock in right there and just big old smile on the face, you know, just a song about spending time with people you love.
You know, what I love about your music and, you know, your band as a whole, it's very feel good music. That's, I think, what I think every musician kind of wants to do in the end, even if they're not going in that direction. At the end of the day, you want people to feel something from music. And if they feel good, that's an extra bonus. Tell me, like, how a lot of that philosophy came with some of your songwriting and the style and sound of the band.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that comes from those funk and soul influences. I think any songwriter will tell you it's way easier to write a sad song than it is to write a happy song.
It's very true.
You know, I think drawing from those really like strong backbeat influenced grooves. I think Donnie, who plays drums in the band, really helps drive a lot of that really upbeat, positive feel. I recently talked to a songwriter who's really, I really respect here in Austin, a guy named Tyler Jordan from a band called Good Looks. They've been on KUTX and playing South by Southwest and ACL and all those festivals. And he said, when you're writing a song, start with a major chord and just work your way off a major chord and see if you can make something meaningful that sounds positive, because that resounds with people in a way. If you can do it tastefully and it doesn't sound corny, it can make or break a band. So that's something I think we try to work on kind of consistently, is trying to write those really feel good, positive tunes while still having those, you know, funky kind of dirty grooves as much as we can.
Well, it's funny because it's like, you're totally right. It's like, sometimes you can take minor chords and make them sound like danceable or groovy, but it is way harder to start with A major or a G major and just like keep it sounding compelling without sounding gushing or you're preaching, or there's this fine line. So whenever I write, I always find like, just be honest, just be real. Maybe it's a philosophy. I find that I write the best positive songs when I'm down, ironically. So
yeah.
I want to pull myself out of it. So I write something that is kind of uplifting on that level. You know what I mean?
I'm absolutely the same way. When you're in that depressive state, that's one of those things. It's kind of like therapy. It can really pull you out.
Well, what I love too with songwriters, like I love bands, I love artists, I love musicians. Like, I definitely feel at home with all of them. And songwriters, I also feel a definite like kindred spirit and connect with them. When you're going through something sad, or when you're going through even something joyful, when do you find that you grab your instrument and start writing the most?
Yeah, I really do well in songwriting pulling from the kind of empathetic or sympathetic experiences of the people around me. I personally, as a songwriter, I really struggle to write personal music. So I find it really helpful as a songwriting tool to look at the people I really care about and the hardships that, you know, I want to help them through if I can, or that I just really, you know, I want them to be okay.
Right.
And write songs around that. So a lot of, and you know, I won't divulge all the secrets because not everyone knows, but there are definitely songs that I've written in the past about people very close to me. And I find that just separating myself from the song helps me write something that is a little bit more impassioned personally.
Well, and it's interesting because it's like, I know you're probably like this too. You're looking for the story and whatever you're writing about. And sometimes it's hard to write about yourself when you're kind of living in the story.
Yeah.
So like when you're writing about somebody that maybe you want to help, like what's your approach? Do you kind of like look at it like you're outside looking in, or are you kind of like you're writing it from their perspective? Tell me a little bit how you take that perspective and put it into song.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've had quite a few conversations about with David, who plays trumpet in the band, and a lot of the other band members too, is that it's really easy in songwriting to try to solve the problem.
Right.
And sometimes solving the problem comes across as kind of corny. Sometimes it's better to just address the problem. And so something that we've kind of taken to in our songwriting lately, like for example, in Ghost, which is our song we just released here, yesterday on Halloween. That's a song that is about talking about the problem, about, you know, what to do when you're in a relationship that has ended and you have that strong, passionate feeling for somebody else, but it's just not requited. And, you know, we're not trying to solve the problem. We're just trying to talk about the problem sucks. And it's brutal. And there's no good way to feel that besides feeling it with real deep pain.
Well, what's funny is I'm sure that you have a lot of audience members that love your lyrically hard to handle songs. Like, you may be putting something out there that's like, yo, I'm vulnerable and this is my pain. And people are just booging like, yeah, yeah, I love this song. And you're like, okay, we turn it into something. Tell me a little bit about that response.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's nice. I mean, it's good to write a song that the lyrics hurt, but it's like, we're going to dance through this basically.
Right.
And I mean, that's how I want to be at a show. If I have a band that I love and I know that song is sad, I am dancing my butt off to that song because, yeah, you know, it's okay to feel something, but then know that you can set that aside and still enjoy your life knowing that that pain is there and that you've addressed it or felt it.
Who are some of your biggest influences as far as songwriters or bands?
Yeah, I'm a big folk fan. So I've always been really inspired by Jim Croce, John Prine, Bob Dylan, of course. John Craigie is my favorite. Yeah, he's a Portland based, for people who don't know, he's a Portland based singer songwriter, writes like really clever but just beautiful songs. I always really lean towards those kind of deeply like satirical but really just well crafted songs.
That's amazing. You know, there's a songwriter that he's like a busker, you know, on the street. And his name is Ned Landon.
Ned Landon.
A lot of people don't know that he's one of my biggest influences.
I'm gonna write him down because I want to look him up after the show.
You know what? It's really crazy. You won't find a lot of records out there. And you know what? I had a residency in Santa Monica. Like, this was years ago, and I ran into him. And I was like, man, I would love for you to, you know, open for us and, like, do a show. And, you know, he just, like, got cold feet. He's like, yo, I don't play in clubs. Like, I just get like anxious about doing it. And I just want to play on the street because that's where I feel, you know, like the most at home and at peace. And I'm like, I respect it so much. And I'm like, at the same time, like, this guy is so good and most people don't know him. And he's just like this solo acoustic guy that really kind of changed how I look at music. And it's funny, I haven't brought him up to people in so long, but if you like folk, he's very, very cool. He's one of those guys that, you know, I have this like kind of thing in my brain all the time that I always think about what makes music great. Is it the marketing or is it the music or is it both? Do both kind of like fall in line with each other? One of my trombonists just played with Harry Styles. So I went and saw him on the other, and I've seen him at Coachella and other venues or other festivals. And, he sold out 15 nights at the Forum. 15 nights at the Forum.
He just sold out like 7 or 8 nights in a row here in Austin.
And he did 15 at Madison Square Garden. He's got the most nights sold. And it's all like young kids. And it's like such a positive experience for them. But musically, I'm like, you know, I just saw Eric Gales. I don't know if you know Eric Gales. God. Dude. And you know what? Like, that guy is so burning. And he struggled to get 100 people in this club. And I was just like, this is a shame. This doesn't make any sense to me. That
blows my mind.
This guy is unbelievable. He's unbelievable.
I can't. If he comes up in a video, my jaw drops and I'd forget what I'm doing and I just watch him play.
Yeah, it's crazy. I met him afterwards and I was like, yo, man, this ain't L.A. Like, you're not in L.A. You're like just north. He's like, well, it's pretty close. I said, no, it's not. It's like a world apart. So I'm trying to get him into doing an L.A. show because he just deserves like talent like that. I'm like, you just deserve to have more people there because he's so mind-blowingly good. So
he's a master.
It's just crazy to me how sometimes, you know, music works. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a new band in Austin now. what is a way in this new kind of demographic and this new market and this new atmosphere, how do you guys go about like marketing for shows or getting people aware of your band? Are you spending more time on social media? Do you struggle with that? Because I mean, I don't love social media. I'm not a huge fan. And yet I have to just kind of like make sure I'm there because you're an artist. So you have to be present on some social media platform, you know?
Yeah. It's social media is hard. Like it's kind of the Wild West, like nowadays, especially on like we've had mixed success on TikTok. Like we've had videos that have done really well. And then for months and months, we've posted videos with basically no response. Right. It's really interesting. But you know, I think we've tried to stay consistent. I think when we got here, we were a little burned out. We took a little break from social media. But we've been trying to pick it back up, especially coming into our single release last night. But really this is the first time in a long time we've just been getting out there and seeing shows and meeting musicians. And that's been our best asset so far, honestly, in this town. I went to a show last night that, a guy who is been playing bass with us a little bit recently, invited me out to, and the guy books shows at the venue down the street from our house. And he's like, let me get you guys on a showcase. So it's like, and you know, I almost didn't go. It's just been getting out there and meeting people has been such a huge help. This town, people have been leaving really, really quickly.
Why is that?
As musicians, because it's become such a tech hub and it's become so expensive. Musicians are leaving and they're branching out. And so musicians that are in this town and loyal really want to help those who are coming as musicians to this town, which is really refreshing and kind of unfamiliar. Just people want musicians to stay here and play.
Well, it's so funny. It's like when the pandemic hit, I know everybody went to art. Everybody was watching or listening to music online, on their phone, in a movie. I mean, in their living room, dancing to music and it's like, yet the world doesn't realize sometimes how important artists are to just nurturing and supporting talent. And it just drives me crazy because I've been doing this for 20 years and it's like we used to pack venues with 1,000 people on a Monday night and now all of our fans have kids. And it's like I have to like figure out how to like market to this younger generation and market to the older generation that, you know, people still want to go out and see shows. And I find it with social media, it's just like I find it to be nauseating. It's like this, I can't stand social media. I want to spend all my time playing music and that's all I really want to care about doing. So how do you balance it? And I'm asking you because you're a younger artist that is probably more in tune with social media. This is for my own benefit. Like what makes you balance social media, marketing and playing, rehearsing and gigging? How do you kind of make those all work?
I don't know if we do.
That's a good. These are questions that we all should be talking about together.
Yeah, I really struggle to stay creative while also trying to market towards social media because something you'll find, and I'm sure you've dealt with this too, just trying to stay relevant as we continue to play music is that you start to get into these spots where you're playing, you're jamming, the jam feels good. And you're like, hey, why don't we get this on video, post it and like, you know, get it out there. And then you lose it. The sauce is gone out of nowhere because you've put a camera to it.
Yes.
And I mean, it's the same thing with songwriting. I've gotten some advice recently that was, you know, when something good is happening, you're playing guitar, you're writing lyrics, don't grab your voice memo out, keep going. Right. Like that's where the creativity dies is when you get the app out and start writing down the lyrics or when you start recording, you've all of a sudden you're performing, you're not playing for yourself.
You totally gave me chills because that's everything I believe. It's like you're trying to kind of like capture this magic. Mm-hmm. And it's like as soon as somebody else, you let the other, like either the technology or somebody else in, it flies away. It's just like it's not gonna stick around because it's only supposed to be there for a certain time. I also feel that same thing with recording. It's like my favorite moments are when I bring a song into the band and we rehearse in that first space of just that's like,
always feels great.
It's always the best. I mean, it's like there's energy in the room that is so palpable that it's like by the time you end up recording it, even if you recorded it right then, it would never be the same. And I'm always envious of bands like the Rolling Stones or Zeppelin, where they spent months, years recording, mm-hmm. where they were like walking in and trying to capture that energy on that first time around.
Yeah.
While just like squandering so much money to do it. So it's like what I really respect about bands like yourself is you're out there gigging, you're rehearsing constantly, you're writing constantly. It's like a super vibrant part and point in the band that you're in right now, because mm-hmm. you're churning out music, you're staying inspired, mm-hmm. and yet you have all these other things that you have to tackle. Tell me like how you sift through that.
I mean, we just stay organized. We stay on a schedule. It's so easy to fall off. And also I think, you know, it's something we're learning is that you kind of have to treat it, you have to treat it like a business. It's a business. And that means we're having business meetings and we're making time to segment the creative time from the business time, because, you know, like we were talking about, if you get that camera out, you lose the love, you lose the energy. Can you state your question again? Sorry, I'm getting.
So like, what I'm saying is, like, you know, you are super prolific right now. You're super inspired. You're rehearsing all the time. Mm-hmm. You're like also balancing social media. Like, how do you find the time to kind of balance and sift through the madness of like all the things you need to, like, if I had it my way, mm-hmm. I'd always have a videographer around at every rehearsal and every recording.
Me too.
It would just be like, oh my God, this makes so much sense. And they would be on salary, but it's not possible. It's impossible for somebody to always be there. I mean, it's literally impossible unless it's so organized that they're on tour with you. And even then, I mean, I've had photographers where like, I'm literally like yelling at them on stage, like, take pictures of the crowd. There's 10,000 people behind us. What are you doing taking another shot of a bass player or a guitar? You know, it's like, that just happens. It's like, you have to try and get these pictures that people will just lose their breath with, and also stay creative and engaged. Yeah. Where you're the front man. You are like, you and I have this parallel too. It's like, that is not an easy task, because you always have to wear the hat of being the steam engine. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So I want to first tell you, if you ever need help, if you ever need advice, please reach out. You have my contact info now, because you're going to need it. You're going to need it. There are times where it's like, I went through so much, you know, just to get into major festivals, to open for major acts. And it's like, I have had these conversations with major artists in very much the same way. And they're all in the same boat. They all don't love social media. Ray LaMontagne is so funny. We opened for him, and I was like,
he's one of my favorites.
And I was like, Ray, can I get a picture with you? And he's like, man, I'm deathly afraid of cameras. And he's like, I just don't do it. And another friend of mine asked him the same question in another city. He said the same thing. And I'm like, how is this guy on social media at all? And like, people are able to get pictures of him when he's like, this is not something I want to ever be a part of. And yet that's how his music is. It's like, you feel like you're just able to just peek into his music, and that's why he's, you know, he is the way he is. He said he doesn't
Did you listen to his interview he just did recently? Yeah. He's a very rarely interviews, but he just did an interview. It was either with Eric Krasno or he did a songwriter. It was a songwriter's podcast. I'm drawing that's a blank awesome. On who it was, but he is such a recluse in. It's so like, for how open and beautiful his songwriting is. And
dude, he hates recording. He told me, he's like, I was like, man, when you were making Trouble, like, he's like, oh man, I hate recording. I just want to get in and get out. I don't even want to be there for anything. And I was like, my goodness, you're making amazing records. How do you do this? You know, cause it's like, he fascinates me, because, you know, I think all musicians and artists fascinate me, because the process is always the same. And we all have to go into a recording studio, record either to a click or not, record parts that are either rehearsed or not, or come in with songs that are unwritten. And it's like this beautiful live art form that we're just trying to capture it. And yet you guys are succeeding at doing it. You guys are releasing new records. You guys are in a new city. You guys are doing the hustle. So I love that you're doing all this. I want to play something next. What do you want to play next?
Let's save the single we just released for last. So we'll play, let's play a live video. We'll play Distance. It's one of the, what we recorded for a Tiny Desk submission.
All right, here it is.
Justify the distance with a dream about coming home when you never really planned on coming back around. Justify the distance with a dream about coming home when you never really planned on coming back around. Justify the distance with a dream about coming home when you never really planned on coming back around.
slamming, dude. So slamming. I mean, it's a no-brainer to me. You guys are just an awesome band. I love listening to every song that you guys play. I love the way you say you play songs live. I know I'm asking you a lot of hard questions.
You're too nice. Thank you.
But these are good. These are hard questions because it's like these are things that I always think about. Look, my bulldog wants to say hello. Oh, he just disappeared.
Oh, bummer.
No, the reason I ask you that, it's like, you know, today I was playing piano. And when I get into a zone of playing piano, I just sometimes just want to – I want days – where I just have nothing, no responsibility except playing music, because a lot of these great musicians, that's all they're doing. They're just playing music. Yeah. And so I know you have to balance social media, marketing, organization, because that's what I have to do. I'm always booking gigs on the phone, doing emails. I have days where I'm doing sessions, songs, songwriting stuff, arrangement stuff, then album stuff. And it's like, I love all of it because it's what I love to do. But I also really at the core just want to play. I want to play music and write songs all day, every day. Yeah. You know, I just want to make room, more and more room for that. So that's why I ask you these questions. Now, as a band, when you're arranging stuff, do you come in with a finished song and you're kind of like arranging stuff together? Are you guys writing it like in rehearsals? Tell me about your writing process as a band.
Yeah, I would say we're very free flowing. We have quite a few members that will come in with either partially or almost fully completed songs. We try to do, I think, some arrangement stuff together. I would say, like, you know, there's certainly some separation of duties most of the time. Like the horns are writing horn parts, and the, you know, the rhythm section's kind of working through on their own accord. But we try to get input from everyone on pretty much everything. One thing that we've recently done, which I think has been really good, is trying to get more people involved in the lyric writing process. It's not always easy, but I think it's a lot more fun to play a song when you've had a part in writing it.
Right.
That's why people write original music. It's always more rewarding to play your music than it is to play someone else's. So. And you know, maybe not for everyone, but for us. So yeah, we try to get everyone involved a little bit, but you know, there are songs, like Ghosts, for example, is one that, you know, Josh came in with the guitar part that he worked on with Donnie, the drummer, and he did a full demo of the whole song, just guitar and drums. And then we just started to build it out from there. So it's really pretty modular. It's just kind of whoever comes in with an idea, we just build on it if we like it and it groups.
And do you rehearse like once a week, three times a week? How do you guys go about it?
Yeah, so when we were in Kansas City, we were doing once a week. But now that we're in Austin and there's no basements in Texas, you got to rent rehearsal space. The HOAs in neighborhoods aren't big fans of a seven-piece band blasting at any time of day. So there's great rehearsal spaces in this town because there's lots of bands. So we've been, you know, in as of now, probably about once a month or so, but just working on a bunch of stuff on the side, working on finishing the album, you know, kind of all that stuff. So once we get started on gigs, I think we'll probably be going more weekly, just so we can keep the vibe going and stay tight.
I'm gonna tell you, I'm gonna give you a little piece of advice that took the band from being like a good band to a great band, and that was we're rehearsing three times a week. Yeah. And I'll tell you what happens with that. It's we started playing a lot more. We started adding so much to arrangements. The arrangements of the song started growing that we'd never kind of like settle on it just being something. And then that's what the way we play it every week. There were quotes, there were songs. The songwriting started becoming more plentiful. And it becomes a little bit more hectic because it's like you're treating it like a job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's hard to do that with so many schedules. Mm-hmm. But if you can push it up to two or three times a week and then add gigs in that, you are going to see a huge jump in how many songs you guys have, how you can get more things done musically and even just business side. Like, you know, even if it's just like meeting, I found that when we did that, and I wish we could do that now. My band always asks me, like, when are we going to go back to doing that? I'm like, man, when I have a full-time manager and a full-time booking agent that's booking us at festivals and clubs all the time because like I'm always trying to get that kind of stuff, you know, going. So, but I love it. I love the band. It's just such a, you know, you're one of my favorite new bands, and I don't use those words lightly because the songwriting's always there. The arrangements are always there. The players are always slamming. It's just great. Good feeling music. So I can't wait to play a show with you guys. We talked about that via text.
Yeah, me too. Thank you.
Let's play something else before we run out of time. But what do you want to play last?
Yeah, let's play. So I know I've said it before, but I'll say it again. We just put out a song called Ghost yesterday in honor of Halloween. But this is a brand new tune. It's the first of kind of the second round of stuff we're putting out for leading up to the album. And I think one that I'm really, really, really pleased with. It's all self-produced and it's a tune about, like we talked about, it's that unrequited love feeling where the relationship has fallen away and someone really is still deeply connected to it. And the other person has completely given up and moved on, and how much that hurts. And yeah, this is one of the deeper, I'd say more emotional songs on the album.
All right. Here's Glass Bandit with Ghost.
I guess you're giving me up. If loving is a two-way street and I was fixing it up, you just ran it over me. It's not the end of the world, it's the destruction of the universe. And I'm down on the ground and I can barely breathe, drowning in the memories. So what do you want? Do you want from me? Was it enough to see that my heart is broken apart, dealing with recovery? And my hands are sweating again. Did you do what you used to be? If there's a space.
So slamming. Love it. Love it.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
I know there was a connection to Halloween because it's called Ghost. Tell me how you decided to market it on Halloween.
You know, it was fitting. We were like, we've got about a month before Halloween, and we were trying to decide what single to release, and it was just absolutely the most fitting. We got the little spooky noises kind of bringing you in and taking you out, and it just felt fitting.
Now, you said it was self-produced.
I think
it's more like selves produced, right?
Well, yeah,
there's a lot of people there, right? So tell me how you guys work in the studio together when you're making parts or arrangements, or do you kind of like, no, this is what it's going to be, and we're just going to jump on certain parts that we know are going to be like the footholds of the song?
Yeah, so we're a pretty big band, so the arrangements kind of naturally lead themselves to be fairly dense when we have everyone doing their thing. So a lot of these tunes don't take a lot of extra instrumentation, but Josh, who plays guitar in the band and also sings background vocals on that song, he does all of the recording, mixing, and mastering, and most of the producing for this album. He's a wizard. He's out of this world at it. And it was pretty much all done in a basement in Kansas City. And then, you know, a little bit of finishing touches here in Austin, just in a living room. He knows how to work with his space in a really, really great way.
So when he sends you guys a mix, you don't have like nine people that say it's good, and then one person is like, I don't know, I kind of need more drums on this mix, or do you?
No, we've actually been, we all sat down and had a mix revision session together. So listen through, everyone wrote their notes. I think, you know, in previous years when it felt like less serious, we were all kind of like, it's fine. It sounds good. But, you know, this is something we all really deeply care about. We spent, you know, over a year building these songs and really making them sound like us. So I think there's a lot more intention in the revision process. And, you know, you also are blind to your own, you know, your own sound. So we've sent these songs out to close, you know, to our friends and family, people that musical opinions are, you know, really close to us, and got other people's opinions, because you can very easily be blinded to your own music.
Well, I think the other thing too, it's like you have to be careful, because you know, music changes. Like the records I made 20 years ago, they don't sound to me now the way they did when I was making them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's kind of like everything slowly becomes like distant in the rearview mirror. But when you're right there, you see that stop sign, you see the traffic light. But 20 years from now, you're gonna be like, yeah, I think there was a windy road with maybe a couple traffic lights. You're not gonna remember.
Yeah.
So
I listen back to my old, you know, my old solo stuff that is out there still, and I'm like, oh gosh, like I wish I could redo that. And even some of the old Glass Bandit stuff, I think, you know, we all have our reservations on, you know, what's been done. But, you know, I think it's, you know, you make it and you grow past it. And I think, you know, it's important to still appreciate where you were and move proudly into your new stages, which is, I think, is what we're doing.
I think you're going to find in time, you're not going to have as many criticisms. There's always things you can change and fix, you know, but I think you're going to look at it with more like graciousness. Like, man, we did it. We made this. This happened. We finished. Yeah. You know, because there are thousands of bands and films and art projects and paintings that never get finished. So the fact that you finish this completed work and it gets there, that's the reward, you know? So the funny thing is, like, I always listen to records and like the old records, I'll listen to, I'll be like, oh, we could have mixed this differently. We could have done this. And then there's like some surprise that I forgot about. Like, I forgot we did this. Oh, that's cool. And you find like there's a little bit more distance with it. And it's really hard to get that when you're making it. So I think the most important thing is keep making music, keep making it as joyful as you guys make it sound like you're making, because it just sounds joyous and it sounds like a celebration of music in the best ways. And I love your band and your music and your songwriting and arrangement styles. Where can people find you? Where can people see you play live, or when is the next release?
Yeah. So we're, Ghost just came out. So please, if you go stream it on all those streaming platforms, you can find all of our music on glassbanditmusic.com. And, you can follow us on social medias, at Glass Bandit, and just, you know, go check us out. And, you know, we hope you like what you hear.
Well, we're going to work together, Ben. We're going to do some shows together. I promise We'll come out to Austin, make it easy, and then we'll bring you guys to LA somehow. We'll make it work, okay?
Oh, we'd love to. Thank you so much, Nikki. It was great to chat with you.
Of course. Thanks for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Ben, we'll see you guys next week. Peace and love. Check out Glass Bandit on all major platforms. Check them out. They are such badass musicians and people. I love them all, and I haven't even met them all yet, but we're going to start slowly getting them. Each and every one of them will be on the show at some point. So thank you, Ben, for being a guest.
Thanks, Nikki.
We'll see you guys next week. Peace and love.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.